Hello and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, January 6, 2021. I am your reader, Ike Rayford, and our weather, wet snow with a high of 35 and a low of 27. Our mini editorial comes from Jim Anderson of Lamars, Iowa. He says, any politician supporting to overthrow democracy by not recognizing the votes of all the people should be targeted to be removed in his or her next election. Again, that is from Jim Anderson of Lamars, Iowa. Our front page story, policing in a pandemic. Police adapt to virus impact. And this is from Nick Heirich of the Sioux City Journal. Jeffrey Dimitri work shift now begins with a squirt of hand sanitizer and a thermometer. For months now, during the novel coronavirus pandemic, Dimitri and fellow Sioux City police officers must take their temperature before they begin their shift. Anything above 100.4 degrees and they're sent home with one of the symptoms of COVID-19. 98.6 looks like I'm working today, Dimitri said on a recent morning after holding the thermometer to his head. It's one of many changes law enforcement have had adjusted to since the pandemic began earlier this year. It's a hands-on job and you can't patrol streets and highways or respond to emergency calls from a home office, he says. It's COVID, just a huge obstacle in our way to maintain that service, but it's just another challenge that we have to overcome, Sioux City Community Policing Sergeant Jeremy McClure said. Meeting with crime victims responding to a heated domestic disturbance or arresting a suspect all involve face-to-face interactions in which the recommended 6 feet of social distancing often is not practical or possible. Officers wear a mask over their mouths and noses as much as possible, but masks can muffle their voices, making it hard to understand what they're saying. Removing a mask so that commands can be heard clearly takes precedence over protection from the virus, McClure said. As much as we want to mitigate COVID risk, sometimes other life and death situations take priority, he said. Woodbury County Sheriff Dave Drew said deputies are encouraged to wear masks when responding to calls, but are allowed to take them off if they're outdoors or can maintain a safe distance. He and McClure said emergency dispatchers have played a key role in helping officers take precautionary measures. During each call for service, dispatchers obtain information from the caller to see if there are any people at the scene who have COVID-19 or symptoms of the illness and relay that information to officers who might be able to ask people to step outside when they arrive so they can avoid others who might have the virus. Drew said the larger concern for the sheriff's office has been keeping the virus under control inside the Woodbury County Jail. Visitation of inmates from outside groups such as Alcoholics Anonymous have been prohibited during the pandemic. Jail officers wear masks at all times. Movement of inmates within the jail has been restricted to reduce the number of people they come into contact with. Inmates must wear a mask when leaving their cell block to see a nurse, talk to their lawyer, or go to court. We have done all right. Better than anticipated, Drew said of the efforts to contain the virus. After an initial outbreak of 7 cases in June, Drew said the number of cases among inmates have been limited. We're constantly cleaning, he said. He and McClure both said officers have tested positive during the pandemic, but they've been able to maintain normal staffing levels by asking other officers to work overtime to fill in. In an effort to reduce exposure to the virus, Sioux City's police officers sanitize their patrol vehicles at the start of each shift. Roll call and briefings at shift changes are now done virtually on officers' in-car laptops rather than in a meeting room. It's like a video chat with our supervisor. He lets us know anything going on from the night before, Officer Ryan Moritz said. Moritz said he misses having the few minutes of water cooler talk with other officers before heading out on patrol. The camaraderie is degraded a little bit, but it gets us a little bit earlier, gets us out a little bit earlier, Moritz said of the new reality of virtual meetings. It's one of many adjustments officers have made and will continue to make, McClure said. No matter the number of COVID-19 cases in the city, officers will continue to interact with the community as safely as possible. The biggest thing ultimately is we have a job to do, he said. We've made a commitment to the community and we can't waiver. Another story from our front page, Sulander's checking status of stimulus checks, again from Nick Heidrich. Sulander's curious about the status of the latest round of pandemic-related stimulus payments have flooded banks with phone calls and overwhelmed online banking systems and mobile apps. Everyone, it seems, wants to know if the U.S. Treasury Department has deposited the $600 payments into their bank accounts yet. The online banking and our mobile apps were so flooded that people were timing out or couldn't get in. Both of them were inundated, said Troy Stinson, Marketing Director of Security National Bank in Sioux City. Quote, we're just asking people to be patient, end quote. President Donald Trump signed the bill containing a federal stimulus package and the $600 payments on December 27th. The Internal Revenue Service has said it began electronically depositing the checks on December 29th. It began mailing paper checks to recipients on December 30th. The IRS announced late last week that because of an error, 15 or 20 million of the 112 million recipients expected to get the money through electronic payment will now be receiving a check in the mail. Those payments generally take longer to arrive. Stinson said the bank began to see stimulus checks being electronically deposited into its customers' accounts last week, and that has continued this week. The latest round of stimulus payments is similar to the first round, which included $1,200 per person and was included as part of a larger coronavirus relief package passed by Congress in March. Many of the same people will receive the money again, but there are some small eligibility differences. Generally, individuals earning less than $75,000 and married couples filing jointly and making less than $150,000 will receive the full $600. Heads of households earning less than $112,500 are also due the full amount. Those who earn more than that will receive smaller payments. Some taxpayers will not receive a stimulus check. Some people aren't fully understanding who qualifies for it, Stinson said. Security National Bank last week emailed customers a letter containing information about the stimulus checks. Judging by the percentage of check clicks and traffic to the bank's website, Stinson said the majority of people who received the letter were clicking on it and reading it. Quote, it was one of our most read articles of the year, so that shows the uptick of interest, he said. To check the status of your payment with the IRS, visit the agency's website at irs.gov/getmypayment. For more information about the stimulus checks and whether you qualify, go to irs.gov. Our Mr. Goodfellow charity today is from Moore, Corbett, Heffernan, Moeller, and Meese, LLP. Donation is $1,000. About the donor, the Moore, Corbett Law Firm is a general practice law firm with roots going back to 1896. Focused on estate planning, real estate, business law, and education law, with its main office located in Sioux City, the firm's attorneys practice regularly in the state of Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota, as well as having attorneys who engage in nationwide specialty practices. Our attorneys value open and honest communication with integrity and professionalism and are forward-thinking, progressive, and have a clear vision for the future needs of the firm's clients. Comment from the donor, bringing joy to Siouxland families is an honor that we are grateful to be able to assist the Sioux City Journal Mr. Goodfellow charity with. Our lawyers have actively participated with this good cause since 1977, and we're proud to have been tail waggers over the years, said Dan Moore, partner with the firm. Moore Corbett Law Firm has donated to the Sioux City Journal, and they have a picture showing from left to right, Jerome Pearson, Chuck Corbett, Daniel Horton, Dan Moore, Caitlin Bulcher, Carrie Haruska, Angie Schneiderman, and Melissa Jones, and they are standing in their firm's offices. If you would like to speak out, you can. Today's question is, on what do you plan to spend your $600 stimulus check? If you'd like to speak out, you can do that at www.facebook.com/Sioux City Journal. Online poll, today's question is, have you received your $600 stimulus check? And yesterday's poll, did you struggle getting back in the swing of work and school after the holidays? 17% said yes and 83% said no. And there was a total of 29 votes for that question yesterday. On the local front, 9 COVID deaths reported in Northwest Iowa. And this is from Britt Hayworth of the Sioux City Journal. The number of deaths in Northwest Iowa attributed to COVID-19 rose by 9 on Tuesday, which comes one day after 13 deaths were reported. Public health officials announced the 9 new deaths came in 5 area counties. There were no additional deaths reported in Northeast Nebraska or Southeast South Dakota as of Tuesday afternoon. The highest county increase in the number of deaths from COVID-19 came with 3 in Lyon County, which rose to 28. The number of deaths rose by 2 to 46 in Sioux County and by 2 in 60 to 60 in Plymouth County, where 9 deaths have occurred over the last 7 days. Elsewhere, the number of deaths increased by 1 to 16 in Clay County and by 1 to 23 in Cherokee County. Those deaths were reported in statistics from the Iowa Department of Public Health. There was no information on the genders or ages of the Siouxland people who died in the information coming on Tuesday. The deaths are rising, even though positivity rates and hospitalizations are dropping in Siouxland, since deaths are lagging indicators of the pandemic. In Woodbury County, the number of positive novel coronavirus cases have, since the pandemic began, increased to 12,454. Siouxland District Health Department reported the cases rose by 42 over 24 hours by Tuesday morning. Then an additional 18 were reported by the state by afternoon. On Tuesday, a total of 46 patients who tested positive for COVID-19 were hospitalized at Mercy One Siouxland Medical Center or Union Point Health St. Luke's, according to the Siouxland Public Health Department. Of those patients, 27 were hospitalized for treatment of the virus. Siouxland District Health encourages residents to continue taking precautionary measures to help reduce the spread of the coronavirus, including wearing masks in public places, staying home if you or a household member are not feeling well, social distancing, and frequent hand washing. For most people, the coronavirus causes only mild or moderate symptoms, such as fever and cough. For some, especially older adults and people with pre-existing health problems, it can cause more severe illness, including pneumonia. Some of the numbers of the coronavirus cases, and these numbers are presumptive cases of coronavirus that continues to rise in Siouxland. South Dakota, 101,076 cases. Nebraska, 169,585 cases, and in Iowa, 287,305 cases. These numbers are as of 2 p.m. on Tuesday from the State Public Health Department. Siouxland COVID-19 cases by the county, and these are positive cases. In South Dakota, Yankton has 2,546 cases with 26 deaths. Clay County, 1,652 with 12 deaths. Union County, 1,644 cases with 30 deaths. In Nebraska, Cedar County, 720 cases with 10 deaths. Dixon, 548 counties with 6 deaths. Wayne County, 942 with 6 deaths. Thurston, 920 with 9 deaths. And Dakota County, 3,627 with 58 deaths. On the Iowa side, Lyon County, 1,271 with 28. Osceola, 620 with 8 deaths. Dickinson, 1,744 with 20 deaths. Sioux, 4,372 with 46 deaths. O'Brien, 1,617 with 53 deaths. Clay County, 1,573 with 16 deaths. Plymouth County, 3,403 with 60 deaths. Cherokee, 1,280 with 23 deaths. Buena Vista, 3,761 with 27 deaths. Sac County, 1,055 with 14 deaths. Crawford County, 2,165 with 22 deaths. Ida, 711 with 29 deaths. Monona, 559 with 16 deaths. And Woodbury County, 12,454 cases with 171 deaths. Once again, these numbers as of 2 p.m. on Tuesday from the state and local health department. Arrests made in connection with the Walker Street homicide, and this is from the Journal staff. An arrest has been made in a New Year's Day shooting that left one Sioux City woman dead and three others injured on the 2600 block of Walker Street. Christopher I. Morales, 19, has been charged with intimidation with a dangerous weapon and going armed with intent. He was arrested Sunday in the 1900 block of Douglas Street when he tried to flee officers. Once in custody, he was found to be in possession of a firearm. He was then charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm, unlawful carry of weapons, and interference with official acts. Based on that arrest and seizure of the firearm, detectives were able to connect Morales and the firearm to the shooting that killed Mia Alexis Marie Kritis, 18, and injured others during the early morning hours of January 1. According to Sergeant Jeremy McClure, a subject was forced to walk into the residence by Morales and additional suspects before they fired into a house with a 9mm caliber handgun and an assault rifle. McClure said investigators counted at least 27 rounds that were fired at the house. Around 20 to 25 people were at the party at the time of the shooting. Additional charges are pending based on the results of forensic examinations of evidence collected at the scene. McClure said Tuesday morning that he didn't know the status on the victims injured in the incident. He said detectives are still searching for information on additional suspects involved in the shooting. Anyone with information can contact the Sioux City Police Department. On our briefs, woman flown to hospital after crash in Sioux Center, Iowa. A woman seriously injured in a two-vehicle collision was flown by helicopter to a hospital. The Sioux County Sheriff's Office in a release reported that wreck occurred about 3 p.m. Monday at the intersection of Iowa Highway 10 and U.S. Highway 75, 3 miles south of Sioux Center. Larry Sorensen, 60, of Hastings, Nebraska, was southbound in a Kentworth semi-tractor pulling a freight trailer on Highway 75. Jocelyn Van Egdeman Briggs, of 18, of Hayward, Iowa, was driving a Ford sedan westbound on Highway 10. Van Egdeman Briggs drove into the intersection and the two vehicles collided, the police said. A passenger in the Ford, Linda Van Egdeman, 73, of Hayward, was flown from the scene by Avera Curflight to Sanford USD Medical Center in Sioux Falls for treatment of serious injuries. Van Egdeman Briggs was cited for failure to yield from a stop sign. The Kenworth sustained approximately $20,000 in damage, and the Ford roughly $10,000 in damage. Sioux City teen pleads not guilty. A Sioux City teenager pleaded not guilty Tuesday to charges of sexually abusing a boy. Alexander Raff, 17, entered his written plea in Woodbury County District to 4 counts of second-degree sexual abuse. Each count carries a 25-year prison sentence. According to court documents, Raff forced a boy under the age of 12 to participate in sex acts on numerous occasions from December 2019 through August. During questioning from police, Raff admitted to committing the acts, court documents said. Public defender Jennifer Solberg on Tuesday filed a motion to transfer the case to juvenile court. A hearing on the transfer request has yet to be scheduled. In the state and nation, from our journal, Des Moines Bureau, and this is Aaron Murphy, U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican Iowa, was referring to a potential debate in the U.S. Senate, not the joint sessions during which Congress will decide whether to certify the results of the 2020 presidential election. When he said Tuesday he does not expect Mike Pence, vice president, to preside over the Senate, Grassley's office said Tuesday. Grassley's comments caught the attention of national reporters Tuesday morning when asked about Wednesday's proceedings. He said, "First of all, I will be, if the vice president isn't there and we don't expect him to be there, I will be presiding over the Senate." Republican President Donald Trump has, without any evidence of voter fraud or any other electoral malfeasance, pressured Pence to reject the results of the election that Trump lost to Democrat Joe Biden. That left some to wonder whether Pence would oversee the certification of the results in Congress, a procedure scheduled for Wednesday in a joint session, or if Pence might instead punt the responsibility to Grassley, who serves as president pro temp of the Senate. Grassley's office, however, said Grassley was not saying he does not expect Pence to preside over the joint session. Rather, Grassley's office said the senator was referring to a potential debate over the election results in the U.S. Senate. If the election results are challenged in the joint session, The House and Senate will convene in their respective chambers and debate the matter. That, Grassley's office said, is what the senator was referring to when he said he did not expect Pence to be in the Senate. Grassley fully expects Pence to preside over the joint session, his office said. Grassley does not plan to join U.S. Senator Josh Hawley, Republican Missouri, in objecting to the election results, Grassley's office said. However, Grassley's office said he will listen to any debate that stems from an objection and will decide how to cast his vote after he considers all the information before him. No evidence of significant voter fraud or misconduct has been produced by anyone who has questioned the election results, including federal courts, which have rejected or declined to hear dozens of lawsuits brought by Trump and his allies. As always, our quote of the day is from Walter Scott, a Scottish novelist. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Again, that is from Scottish novelist Walter Scott. This week's local news recap, Sioux City Council votes to assess unpaid skywalk charges to hotel. 3 months worth of past due skywalk bills will be assessed to the Sioux City Hotel and Conference Center. By voting to approve its consent agenda Monday, the Sioux City Council passed a resolution that will allow the city to recover skywalk charges for the months of July, August, and September from CSC Hospitality, LLC, owner of the hotel at 707 4th Street. The hotel's current unpaid balance is $19,517.31, with $12,284.18 as past due. Public Works Director Dave Carney told the council that CSC Hospitality has no intentions of paying the balance. Councilwoman Julie Schoner asked Carney what the hotel's pushback is. "I think they're financially having difficulty," he said. CSC Hospitality purchased the former Howard Johnson Hotel in January 2019 for $4.5 million with hopes of renovating the 12-story structure and eventually flying the flag of a national hotel chain. In other action, the council also voted on the third and final reading of an ordinance changes that will add a municipal infraction penalty for property owners who permit firework violations to occur on their property. The council voted 4-1 in favor of the ordinance on all three readings, with Councilman Pete Grokin casting the lone no vote. "I think we've all had complaints over the last couple of years from citizens of neighborhoods, from veterans, from pet owners. We're concerned about injuries that happen from the mishandling of fireworks," Grokin said. "I firmly believe it's the city's responsibility to look out for the safety and the welfare of the citizens. I don't know how we can do it any better than to actually ban the fireworks. The city's ordinance allows fireworks to be legally discharged from 1 to 11 p.m. on July 3rd and 4th and from 1 p.m. on December 31st until 12:30 a.m. on January 1. Under the current ordinance, direct violators are charged with simple misdemeanors. Illegal fireworks discharge carries a minimum of $250 fine on private property and $500 on city property. The revised ordinance adds fines for property owners of $250 for the first offense, $500 for a second offense, and $1,000 for a third or subsequent offense. I hope no one gets fined. I hope we can pull together and pull this off," Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore said. "I see what's going on here. The council is teetering on banning fireworks. I don't think that's the answer." Former state legislator declines to wear a mask during city council meeting. Sioux City, Rick Bertrand, a Sioux City businessman and former Iowa Republican state senator, declined to wear a mask on Monday while addressing the Sioux City Council about proposed changes to the city's firework ordinance that would hold private landowners liable for fireworks violations occurring on their property. When Bertrand stepped to the podium in a mask, Councilman Alex Waters told him, "There's an ordinance in the building, so we need you to wear one." A mask was handed to Bertrand, but he declined to put it on and held the mask in his hand as he spoke about how the fireworks ordinance, which he called too subjective, would impact him as a landlord. "I just don't think that going back to the property owners is actually going to fix the problem that you guys are trying to address," said Bertrand, who left the council chambers immediately after speaking. Later on, during the council concerns portion of the meeting, Waters stated that some people act very selfishly and childish by refusing to wear a mask. He urged residents to band together as a community and protect their fellow citizens by wearing masks. "As a country, We've lost 350,000 people. I'd say that's probably something we should pay attention to and maybe heed the warnings of healthcare professionals. I don't know if Mr. Bertrand has a medical degree. I'm not sure, but I would really urge us to listen to science. A public health order issued in mid-November by Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, which requires mask wearing when people are in an indoor public space and unable to social distance for 15 minutes or longer, remain in effect until January 8th. When contacted by the Journal by phone after the meeting, Bertrand called Waters a typical elitist Democrat politician who tries to dictate what other people should do. Quote, I went in there not to talk about a mask. I went in there to talk about fireworks as a property owner. He decided to engage in that conversation, Bertrand said. Quote, I was socially distanced. I was not around anyone. When he offered me the mask, I declined, he said. The reality of it is that if they wanted to remove me, remove me. That's not where the other council members were. Bertrand said he will wear a mask when the legislature passes a law that mandates him to wear a mask. You're looking at overreach by local politicians trying to enforce something in a public forum, he said. Show me the law. Waters also asked a resident who spoke before Bertrand to put on a mask. The man who said he has a hard time talking with a mask on obliged. Iowa COVID deaths hit new monthly high, and this is out of Des Moines. Iowa reported 7 additional coronavirus-related deaths on Tuesday, raising the state total to 3,999. Iowa's per capita death rate moved up one notch to the 14th highest in the nation, with 126.5 deaths per 100,000 people, according to researchers at Johns Hopkins University. Deaths caused by COVID-19 appear to have resulted in record numbers of deaths overall in Iowa. Recently, updated state data shows 3,952 people died in Iowa in November, the highest single month death total for the state, according to Iowa Department of Public Health records. Iowa's death total last year is the highest single year total at least since 1915, public health data in available vital statistics records show. Deaths through November totaled 31,628. Without December deaths, the state already has surpassed 2019 deaths, which totaled 30,669. State public health officials reported 1,813 new confirmed coronavirus cases in the past 24 hours. As of Tuesday morning, as virus spread appears to be increasing again in Iowa, the 7-day rolling average of the positivity rate rose over the past 2 weeks from 32% on December 21 to 45% on January 4th, Johns Hopkins reported. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, January 6, 2021. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituary. Francis Florkey of Sioux City. Francis Florkey, 100, formerly of Correctionville, Iowa, passed away Saturday, January 2nd, 2021, peacefully of congestive heart failure. Services will be 11 a.m. on Thursday at Calvary Lutheran Church in Sioux City with visitation 1 hour prior. Burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery in Pearson, Iowa. Mask and social distances will be required. The services will be live streamed at www.facebook.com/CalvaryLeeds. The family is being assisted with arrangements by Christy Smith, Funeral Home of Morningside. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to Grace Lutheran in Correctionville, Calvary Lutheran in Sioux City, or an organization of your choice. Harlan M. Thompson, Emerson, Nebraska, 72, died Saturday, January 2nd, 2021. Celebration of life was held January 5th from 2 to 7 p.m. St. Paul's Lutheran Church, Emerson, arrangements with Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Janice Jan Fritz of Sioux City. Hello, I'm Janice Fritz. My friends call me Jan for short because I'm short. I like to do puzzles, crafts, and read stories, so I'm going to try and tell you a story that God has been piecing together. It began on November 18, 1946. I was born to Robert and Zetta McElma Smith. We moved around a bit at first, but eventually settled in Sioux City. When I got older, I worked at my Uncle Gene's cleaning business to put myself through Heelan High School. It was a high school when I met the love of my life, a handsome man named Glenn Fritz. You know what they say, if she doesn't find you handsome, at least she'll find you handy. Well, he was both. I graduated high school in 1962 and then started working at Yonkers, running both the switchboard and the freight elevator. I ended up working there a few years, 49 to be exact. Back to Glenn and I. We eventually tied the knot in September of 74. The next big part of our story was the birth of our first beautiful son, Alan, in 1977. A couple of years later, we had ourselves a handy shoot. I mean handsome son, Eric. My boys and the rest of my family mean everything to me, especially my sister-in-law, Bev. We sure had a lot of good times together. All good things must come to an end, and when Glenn passed away 2 years ago, my heart was broken. I went to be with him in eternity on December 26, 2020. But don't worry, that's not the end. I left a legacy with my sons, my daughter, Lindsay. I call her my daughter, but she is married to my handy son, Shoot and Shine Ola. I did it again. Oh well, no time to start over. And my two adorable grandsons, whom I love with all my heart. They can tell you some good stories like Days of Our Lives. That was my favorite story. Anywho, if you'd like to meet them and share stories about me, they are having a celebration of life at Christy Smith Funeral Home, 1801 Morningside Avenue, on January 8th. Visitation will start at 9:30, services at 10:30. As I always told my grandsons, see you later, alligator. And that is the obit of Janice Jan Fritz. Blundine and Coble, Story City, Iowa. Blundine and Coble, 91 of Bethany Life in Story City, passed away on Friday, January 1, 2021, at Mary Greeley Medical Center. Friends may call from 4 to 6 p.m. on Friday at Christ Community Church, 5501 George Washington Carver Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010, where there will be a funeral service held at 6 p.m. A graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. on Saturday at Logan Park Cemetery in Sioux City. Due to COVID-19, face masks and social distancing guidelines will be required. Arrangements are under the direction of the Adams Funeral Home, and online condolences may be left for Blundine's family at www.adamssoderstrom.com. And that's ADAMSSODERSTRUM.com. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the family for future designations. Mildred M. Milley Stolen of Sioux City. Mildred M. Milley Stolen, 93, of Sioux City, passed away at her home surrounded by her family on Sunday, January 3rd, 2021. Services will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday at the Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City, 4125 Orleans Avenue. Arthur G. Art Cooster of Sioux City, or Arthur G. Art Cooster, 87, of Sioux City, passed away on Friday, January 1st, 2021, at a local hospital. Services will be 2 p.m. on Thursday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Burial will follow at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. on Thursday at the funeral home. A link to view the live stream service will be available under Art's obituary at www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. Mask and social distancing are required at the funeral home. Max A. McConnell, Kingsley, Iowa, 84, died Friday, January 1, 2021. Services at a later date. Arrangements are with the Roddy Funeral Home in Kingsley. Dell Allen, 68, died Saturday, January 2, 2021. Arrangements are pending with the Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. And he was from Sioux City, 68 years old. Christina May Barron, formerly of Sioux City. On Friday, December 18, 2020, Christina May Barron, mother of three, passed away at the age of 74. Michelle Renee DeLauder of Sioux City. Michelle Renee DeLauder of Sioux City passed away Saturday, January 2, 2021, at home, surrounded by family and a close friend after a ferocious battle with cancer over the past several months. Services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday at the Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to services. Burial will be at Calvary Cemetery. Online condolences may be made to www.MeyerBrothersChapels.com. L.J. Swede Ororison of Ute, Iowa, 88, died Thursday, December 31st, 2020. Services, January 6th at 10:30 a.m., St. Paul Lutheran Church, Ute. Burial after the service, St. Clair Township Cemetery of Ute. Visitation was January 5th from 5 to 7 p.m., Armstrong Van Houten Funeral Home. Mask and social distancing required. Joel Lester of Sioux City, 58, died Saturday, January 2nd, 2021. Arrangements pending with Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Sharon K. Morrison, Sioux City, 72, died Thursday, December 31st, 2020. Arrangements pending with Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. Dorothy Clausen, Lakeview, Iowa. Dorothy Clausen, 93, of Lakeview, Iowa, passed away on Thursday, December 17, 2020, at Black Hawk Life Care Center in Lakeview, following a battle with COVID-19. Robert Lewis Barron, formerly of Sioux City, on Saturday, January 18, 2020, Robert Lewis Barron, father of three, passed away at the age of 84. Betty L. Ingalls of Sioux City. Betty L. Ingalls, 81, of Sioux City, died Saturday, January 2nd, 2021, at Mercy Medical Center after a lengthy battle with cancer. Services are scheduled at 10 a.m. on Saturday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel, with burial to follow at Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 4 to 8 p.m. on Friday, with family present at 6 p.m., and a prayer service beginning at 7 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel, 6200 Morningside Avenue. Online condolences may be offered to the family at www.MeyerBrothersChapels.com. Clifford Dale Wiseman of Emerson, Nebraska, 71, died Monday, January 4th, 2021. Services January 8th at 12 p.m. Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel, burial after the service, Rose Hill Cemetery, Emerson. Visitation January 8th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the funeral home. June Catherine DeVries of Sergeant Bluff. June Catherine DeVries, 76, of Sergeant Bluff, passed away Tuesday, December 29th, 2020, surrounded by her family. Memorial services were held 2 p.m. on January 5th at Nativity Catholic Church in Sioux City. Arrangements are under the direction of Waterbury Funeral Services of Sioux City. And Sarah J. Rawlings. Sarah J. Rawlings, 87, of Dakota Dunes, passed away Monday, January 4th, 2021, at her home following a brief illness. No services are planned at this time. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Online condolences can be expressed at www.MeyerBrothersChapels.com. In lieu of flowers, donations can be directed to the Hospice of Siouxland or Siouxland Humane Society. And Clifford Cliff Fredrickson of Holstein, Iowa, 95, died Sunday, January 3rd, 2021. Private service, St. Paul Evangelical Lutheran Church, Holstein. The burial was at the Holstein Cemetery with military rites. Visitation, January 6th from 4 to 6 p.m., the Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home of Holstein. And that does complete our obituaries for Wednesday, January 6th. And as always, if you are celebrating a birthday, happy birthday. And the horoscope for your birthday today, Wednesday, January 6th, is organize your time and stay on top of your deadlines. Do your best to get along with others. A positive attitude will encourage compromise. Take good care of your health, wealth, and relationships. Make love a priority. Stop dreaming and start doing. And so that is your horoscope for today. Sounds more like words of advice, right, than horoscopes. Anyway, happy birthday to you. And if you are celebrating a birthday today, you are celebrating birthdays with Kate McKinnon, actress, comedian, Eddie Redmayne, actor, Norman Reedus, actor, John Singleton, celebrated. He was a filmmaker. Howie Long is celebrating. Nancy Lopez, golfer, celebrating. Rowan Atkinson, actor, comedian, famous football coach and sportscaster, Lou Holtz, also celebrating the day. And those that did celebrate with you, Loretta Young and Danny Thompson, Thomas, Khalil Cabran, Carl Sandberg, and Jediah Smith all had birthdays. Well, if we turn over to our sports page, we have a couple things going on here. Let's see. The Iowa State Cyclones won the game against Oregon on Saturday. So we have that as far as, okay, prep. In our prep boys basketball, Lamar's resumed season with win. Lamar's Iowa, the Lamar's High School boys basketball team shot 63% from the floor on Monday as the Bulldogs beat Sioux Center 90-51. Caleb Dreckman led the Bulldogs 6-3 with 25 points, and he made 10 of 12 shots. Bulldog senior Spencer Mackey scored 21 points, and he went 8 for 12 from the floor. Cal Eckstein scored 13 points off the bench. As a team, Lamar's went 36 for 57, and it made 8 of 14 three-pointers. Brady Williams also had 7 assists. And some scores the local prep boys basketball. Rims from St. Mary's 72, Kingsley Pearson 42. The Hawks scored 25 points in the second quarter en route to the win on Monday. Carter Schwarg led the Hawks with 17 points on 6 made shots and 2 free throws. Sophomore Jackson Bunker scored 15 points. The Hawks 7-1 shot 63% on the night. Panthers 4-5 sophomore Evan Newman scored 11 points off the bench. Newman made 4 shots, which 3 of them were beyond the 3-point arc. Emerson Pratt led the KP starters with 8 points. River Valley 44 over Hen 34. Garrett Trapp led the Wolverines with 20 points, and Tyler Town scored 14. The Wolverines 2-3 outscored the Blackhawks 16-6 in the third quarter. Caleb Holmes led the Blackhawks 40, who are 4-4 with 7 points. Spirit Lake 51 over Sheldon 40. The Indians improved to 8-0 thanks to a 50% night from the floor. Vance Catsby led Spirit Lake with 16 points, while senior Creighton Marsh had 14 points. The O-Raps 2-7 also had 2 players who scored in double figures. Ty Sudbeck 15 and Blake Radke 12. Radke made 4 threes. West Lyon 49, Central Lyon 45. Caleb Folkins led the Wildcats, who were 5-2 with 15 points, including 2 made threes. Riley Hogeveen scored 12 points for West Lyon. With the loss, the Lions are now 4-4. In Nebraska, Pender over Why Not 50-36. The Pender Dragons broke an 8-game losing streak and won their first game of the season. Pender senior Dylan Voigt had 5 threes en route to a 19-point win on Monday. Voigt made 7 of 11 shots. Spencer Rabis scored 11 points, and Charlie Schroeder led Why Not with 12 points. Sibley O'Cheedon 51, Trinity Christian 47. The Generals came out to a strong start on Monday, leading 15-7 at the end of the first quarter. The Generals 4-4 shot 37% from the floor, while the Tigers shot 36.8%. Sibley O'Cheedon had 3 players who scored in double figures. Senior Carter Brower led with 14 points. Logan Brooks-Vort had 12 points. And Dougie Noonkeister had 11. The Tigers, who were 4-5, were led by senior Anthony Quaker with 13 points. Lawton Brunson, 70. Akron Westfield, 44. The Eagles led 37-27 at halftime on Monday, and they won their third game of the season. The Preps girls basketball, East and Lamar's win at home. Again, this is from the Journal staff. East High School junior Kayla Benson hit 3 three-pointers Monday to help the Black Raiders with a 44-31 win over Yankton at East High School. Benson hit 2 threes in the second half. Megan Callahan also had 10 points for East, which improved its record to 7-0. The Black Raiders defense held the Gazelles to 11 second half points. Council Bluffs Lincoln 59 over North 19. The Lynx held the Stars to 5 first half points, and the Stars resumed the season by falling to 1-7. Lamar's 54, Sioux Center 49. The Bulldogs scored 20 third quarter points on Monday in the win over the Warriors. Sarah Brown and Kylie Dreckman each hit threes for Lamar's. Brown, a freshman, led the Bulldogs five, who are 5-4 with 16 points. Dreckman scored 12 points. Sue Center, who was 4-5, also had two players who scored in double figures. Willow Bleeker scored 17 points, and J.C. Vandervoel had 10 points. Kingsley Pearson, 65, Rims and St. Mary's, 53. The Panthers outscored the Hawks 18-6 in the second quarter on Monday night. Just a quarter before, Rims and St. Mary outdid KP 26-17 in the third quarter. KP held off the Hawks, who are 6-4 in the fourth quarter, as the 10-0 Panthers won their final quarter 21-17. Panthers junior Mackenzie Goodwin recorded a double-double. Goodwin made 8 field goals and 6 free throws for 22 points a game. Goodwin also had 10 rebounds. 3 Panthers, Brooklyn Berry, Delaney Isminger, and Abby Bailey scored 8 points. Storm Lake, St. Mary 63, Arweva 43. The Panthers had 4 players who scored in double figures on Monday. As Storm Lake, St. Mary's improved to 5-2 to resume the season. Emily Northweir led the Panthers with 16 points on 7 made shots. Sophomore Sydney Hurd also made 7 baskets, and she scored 15 points. Danica DeMars scored 15, while Ellie Bacon had 11 points. Westwood 69, Woodbine 39. The Rebels 8-2 started the game with 17-6 lead over Woodbine on Monday and didn't trail the rest of the way. Jaden Ferris led Westwood with 20 points. She made 9 free throws out of 10 attempts. Katie Mooncraft and Addie Johnson both chipped in 14 points. Sibley O'Cheaton, 60. Trinity Christian, 26. General sophomore Bria Wasman hit threes en route to a 17-point game Monday, helping Sibley O'Cheaton win their 7th game of the season. Wasman also had 5 steals. Madison Brower made 6 free throws en route to a 14-point night. The Generals out-rebounded the Tigers 36-20. The Tigers, who are 2-8, didn't have any players who scored in double figures, but they were led by Kiana Heenan with 8 points. Pender 42, why not 33? Pender Dragons senior point guard Ashley Ostrin led her team with 13 points, as she was 5-18 from the floor. Avery Wegner had 9 points for Pender, 9-3. Pender's defense held Why Not to 17% shooting. The Blue Devils, who were 6-4, were led by Nika Heems and Carly Heems, who both scored 11 points. Hinton 51, River Valley 15. Hinton led 29-11 at halftime on Monday. The Blackhawks improved to 4-4, while the Wolverines are 0-6. Anna Coffey and Bella Badar each scored 12 points for Hinton. Coffey added 6 rebounds, and Ashlyn Corvana also had 6 boards to go along with 4 assists and 5 steals. Aubrey Lake had 6 steals. And Spirit Lake 48, Sheldon 30. Emma Henriksen led the Indians with 9 points on Monday, sparking the second win of the season for Spirit Lake. That is our prep basketball scores. Well, I want to just give you a couple of, there's a story about a look at a new COVID-19 variant. Scientists are trying to understand the new virus strain. And there's a few questions that I want to just share with you. How does one variant become dominant? The question was, that can happen if one variant takes hold and starts spreading in an area, or because a super spreader, the events helped it become established. It also can happen if a mutation gives a new variant an advantage, such as helping it spread more easily than other ones that are circulating. Scientists are still working to confirm whether the variant in England spreads more easily, but they are finding some evidence that it does. The variant outcompetes the other strains and moves faster and infects more people, so it wins the race, Landgren said. The British variant was first detected in September. The WHO official said a new South African variant also has emerged. This is from the Associated Press. Another question was, What's worrisome about the British variant? It has many mutations, nearly two dozens, and eight are on the spike protein that the virus uses to attach to and infect cells. The spike is what vaccines and antibodies drugs targets. Dr. Ravi Gupta, a virus expert at the University of Cambridge in England, said modeling studies suggest it may be up to two times more infectious than the version that has been most common in England so far. He and other researchers posted a report of it on a website scientists used to quickly share developments, but it has not been formally reviewed or published in a journal. And there is a picture of the new variant. It says the new variant of the virus that causes COVID-19 has several mutations on its spike proteins. These spikes are used by the virus to attach to and infect cells. They also are what vaccines and antibody drugs target. And the picture, it says inside a virus, the spike proteins with mutations, and then messenger RNA used by the virus to replicate in the hijacked cell. So it kind of shows how they fight each other. And another question, are people getting sicker or more likely to die? There is no indication that either of those is true, but clearly those are two issues we've got to watch, Landrigan said, as more patients get infected with the new virus. They'll know fairly soon if the new strain makes people sicker. A WHO outbreak expert, Maria Van Kerkhove, said that the information that we have so far is that there isn't a change in the kind of illness or severity. So there was just a couple of questions that was presented, and I believe Dr. Philip Landrigan, a former Center for Disease Control and Prevention specialist who directs a global health program at Boston College, was answering some of those questions. Well, one last look at our weather forecast for the week. Again, today we have a high of 35 with periods of wet snow. Tonight, evening snowstorm total of 3 to 6 inches with a low of 27 degrees. On Thursday, we will have a high of 34 with 21 degree low, cloudy, some winds. On Friday, cloudy as well with a high of 30 degrees, a low of 18. The winds are of the south-southeast. And on Saturday, cloudy, a flurry in the afternoon, a high of 29 and a low of 21. And on Sunday, rounding out the week, intervals of cloud and sunshine. Winds will pick up a little bit out of the northwest, 6 to 12 miles per hour, with a high of 31 and a low of 16 for Sunday. Well, that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, January 6th. I am your volunteer reader, Ike Rayford. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website at iowaradioreading.org anytime. As always, thanks for listening and have a great day. And I hope you have a happy new year.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. Since the dawn of humankind, people have used caves to explore, hold religious ceremonies, create art, or avoid the dangers of weather and predators. Partly because of that, they continue to fascinate scientists today. To create a cave, Mother Nature needs three things: water, rock that can be dissolved by it, and lots of time. Rainwater, as it falls through the atmosphere, picks up carbon from CO2 to become a weak carbonic acid. By the time it hits Earth, it's about as acidic as coffee. As it percolates through the soil, it picks up more carbon from decaying plants, becoming a slightly stronger acid. If the rock below the soil is limestone, gypsum, or dolomite, the water can dissolve along tiny cracks. Over many thousands of years, the cracks become channels, then tunnels, and could eventually become caverns. Water might also mix with hydrogen sulfide gas seeping up from natural oil and gas deposits to form sulfuric acid, which can also dissolve the rock. Protected from daily and seasonal changes on the surface, caves can maintain a stable temperature and humidity. In these delicate environments, the remains of ancient animals and humans, which could have quickly decayed on the surface, have been preserved for millennia. Deeper, more isolated caves have preserved bacteria and microbes undisturbed for millions of years. These qualities make caves important sites for researchers, natural time capsules. There's probably an amazing cave near you, so take a trip and get to know your Earth. I'm Scott Tinker, dissolving mysteries on Earth Date.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.